Welcome to the Savvy Dentist Podcast with Dr. Jesse Green, the show where great dentistry meets great business. Listen in each week as we bring you an inspiring person who will share their story, ideas, and business techniques to help you create a practice and a life you love. And now introducing your host, Dr. Jesse Green.
Hello everyone, it's Jesse Green here. Welcome back to SavvyDentist.com and to the Savvy Dentist Podcast, the show where great dentistry does indeed happily live alongside great business. Now, we all understand that having a wonderful team, a high-performance team, a self-managing team is hugely valuable as we look to grow our business, as we look to scale our business. And of course, being able to have a great workplace culture is going to be absolutely pivotal to that. My guest today is an expert on that topic. Tristan White is the author of a wonderful book called Culture is Everything. And on top of that, this book is based on lived experiences, not based on academic theory. And Tristan's lived experience is as the founder and CEO of the Physio Co, where that business was ranked for 11 consecutive years as one of Australia's best places to work, which is a phenomenal achievement. Tristan is an absolute whiz when it comes to culture. He's not only the author of the book, of course, but he is the host of a podcast called Think Big, Act Small. And in that podcast, he talks a lot about culture. He interviews well-known leaders and gets their thoughts on not just leadership, but of course, how to build a team with a culture that is created by design rather than by default. So we cover a ton of different things in this podcast. We range about lots of things, even from footy clubs where you've got a winning footy team and what makes them win. We talk about how to create a culture by design. We talk about the empathy and accountability continuum, which I think is an incredibly important tool for leaders to embrace as they look to strike the right balance between, you know, being humanistic and caring and having that culture around accountability and getting the job done. So there are tons of things in this episode which I know are going to be really helpful for you as you go about your job of building and leading a great team. So without any further ado, here's Tristan White. Tristan, thank you so much for taking the time to come and hang with us at the Savvy Dentist Podcast. It is wonderful to have you here. How's things with you?
Jesse, thanks for having me. It's awesome to be here with you. Mate, I'm well. Thank you. I'm all's well at my end, working from home. Victoria's place to work from home at the moment, most of the time, mate.
Yeah, it's been a bit tough for the Victorians. Yeah, my heart goes out to them. This is lockdown number 3.
You got it. Yeah, that's right. That's right. Yeah.
Hopefully the last one. Let's all hope
fingers
for that.
Crossed.
Fingers crossed. Mm-hmm. Now, mate, you are the founder and CEO of the Physio Co, which is a business that is incredibly well regarded, and in fact, so well regarded that you were ranked for 11 consecutive years as one of Australia's best places to work. So, firstly, big hat tip to you.
Thank you, mate.
But interestingly, you also are the author of a book called Culture is Everything. And clearly, we're going to be talking about culture and so on today. But I wanted to ask you, when you won those awards, how big a factor was culture in that success?
Yeah, Jesse, really important question. I think it's important just to step back and say, look, I'm a physiotherapist by profession. The Physio Co is something I created with just myself. And I had this dream. I'm a bit of a dreamer, Jesse, and I really like to think that we can do something useful in the world. And so building a team was really, really, really important to me. I thought that I could serve the world and our clients by creating a team that could do important work. And I think many practice owners and entrepreneurs have got it built with a similar sort of model or idea, I suppose. But Jesse, I was trying to build a business in aged care.
Oh, wow.
And aged care is the ugly duckling of the health world in the eyes of many people, including practitioners. So aged care was definitely a tough spot to grow in the early to mid 2000s and through the 2000s. And so building a strong team culture was a competitive advantage that I was really focused on creating. It might sound pretty commercial to say that. I also think it's the absolute right thing to do is to build a great place to work where people enjoy what they do and can connect as their full selves. But the answer to your question, Jesse, is that culture played a huge part in us being able to grow a team, to be connected, to understand what made each of us tick, and then to be able to continue to grow and to win those awards was really satisfying. It's in the early days, maybe I thought it was a bit of chest beating was really important. As time went on, I realized it really reflected on the important work that our team were doing as both personally and professionally, Jesse.
It's a really Interesting segue you've given me. And so thank you for that, because as a podcaster, I love a good segue, and you've given me a couple of really good threads that I can pull on and see where we end up.
You're welcome.
From one podcaster to another, right?
You got it.
You always appreciate a couple of good entry points into the conversation. You've given me a couple, so thank you. I'm going to take one that takes us a little bit back in time, because you mentioned to me that aged care is the ugly duckling around healthcare. And while I know we're going to be talking about culture and teams and leadership and all those sorts of things, I don't want to let the opportunity pass, because it's an interesting choice to go into the ugly duckling area of healthcare. And obviously you went in there consciously, obviously you went in there wanting to make a difference in that space. What was the rationale or thinking behind working in the aged care sector?
Jesse, there's a long story involved in this, but I'll give you the short dot point version. And that is that, like many, sports physio was where I thought my career would likely head when I was studying to be a physiotherapist and starting my career in private practice. And it turns out, though, when I started my career as a private practice physio, I didn't enjoy it anywhere near as much as I had hoped I would. And it turned out for me, and I know many people in many different health professions have made a wonderful career and life's work out of working in, of doing that type of work. But for me, it felt like I was helping healthy people become healthier. And I had this head versus heart challenge that I wasn't doing as important work I could be doing. And so I reflected deep. I left that my first job as a private practice physio, which I was on a path to become a sports physio. Mm-hmm. The Mighty Richmond Tigers, by the way, Jesse, is the
correct club to barrack for. Yeah,
it's about the correct club to barrack for. But they were clearly going to need me to dash out onto the MCG and support those, at the time, lads, but now girls as well, who are playing for the Richmond Tigers.
Yep.
But I digress to say that I realized that I could actually use my physio skills with older people to make a significant difference in their life by helping them. If, let's say, there's an older client who I get to visit in their own homes, they really want to be able to walk down the front, 3-4 front steps at the front door of their house, walk out the driveway, get their mail every lunchtime from the mailbox, go home, read it. Something is so simple like that, Jesse. If I can help people to live longer, healthier, happier lives by using my physio skills, then I think I've done important work in the world. And so there was absolute commitment to the aged care industry and working with older people. But don't get me wrong, I didn't even know what the term entrepreneur meant at the time, but there was a part of me that saw the opportunity to also add services and do something memorable and different, which allowed me to grow a business and grow a team in that aged care world as well.
Yeah, wonderful. And I guess I want to touch on the challenges of growing a business in the ugly duckling sector, because it's one thing to be on a personal mission to do that. It's another thing to create a thriving enterprise in that sector as well. So what were some of the challenges that you experienced in there? Was it about recruiting people? Was it about funding? Was it about getting enough fees to make the whole business viable? What were the common challenges?
There's a fair few, Jesse. And in the very early days, I really wanted to take a private practice quality physiotherapy service to older people wherever they called home. That was my real dream or early drive. I did that well, I think, at least in the early days as a young emerging physio, but it was only, it really wasn't scalable. It was only really commercially attractive enough when it was only me. And then being able to charge enough to the right number of clients at the right rate to be able to employ people, I just couldn't figure that out at the time. And so that's when it evolved to working more closely in aged care facilities and nursing homes. The reason being that there's a high density of living in those facilities, so the commercials worked a bit better. So there was business models challenges. There was also recruiting challenges, and that is that it was really bloody hard to get people to come and work in aged care. And Jesse, I think it's important to note that in the early days, I was trying to attract people that would want to supplement their private practice or hospital jobs with a part-time shift or two in aged care. And I was trying to, I'm not sure, patch it together. It wasn't until a few years into running the physio co where maybe I found my feet and I found my confidence. I become vulnerable enough, Jesse, to in some ways hold up the banner that is the physio co and say, we love older people. We love working in aged care. This is the place for people who want to work in aged care. It's not the place for people who are wanting a part-time extra job. We actually want people who've got their whole selves into this. And I think that really helped us to grow and also helped us to attract people that are like, you know what? I like working with older people, but I've never really said it because it's a bit dorky or it's not as acceptable as working in a hospital or a community health center, but here's an organization for me. And it really helped us. So that was some of the early challenges there, Jesse.
Yeah, wonderful. And all the more amazing to win 11 awards consecutively when you're in that sector as well, facing those challenges, you know, where it probably was that moment where you put your flag in the ground and said, this is us, this is who we are, that I imagine you began to have those thoughts crystallized, be able to have a message to the market that resonated, to be consistent, congruent, really laser focused on your mission. And then you're going to attract those people who go, wow, he's onto something. I'm going to buy into it. I don't quite know what it is, but there's some energy and some passion and I'm going to buy into that. And I'm imagining that was a turning point when you put the flag in the ground.
Yeah, look, Jesse, it really was. It really was. And so it's so fascinating because I started the Physio Co in 2004 and it was just me in 2004. By the end of 2004, I had more work than I could handle myself. I started employing some physios. But it took most of the first 5 years for us to really, and when I say us, okay, mostly me to find my feet and then to build some team around me. But 2009 was a really pivotal year, Jesse. That was the year that I really did build some confidence and really own that message that we were communicating. It was also the year, the very first year that we did enter and then were judged one of Australia's 50 best places to work. And that was a real confidence building year for us because a fledgling healthcare business in aged care that no one really thinks is worth a whole lot of time or energy or effort can be listed as one of Australia's 50 best places to work. That really helped us to think, you know what, if we can be listed once, what's possible? Where can we go over the next decade or so? And it really gave us a real burst of energy.
Yeah, wonderful. So I do want to talk about culture because obviously when it came to the Physio Co, you had to create that team and creating team comes with all sorts of opportunities, but equally all sorts of challenges. And you are known for culture. You've literally written the book on it. Mm-hmm. So one of the things I just want to start is at the very beginning, because I think all of us think we understand culture and perhaps we all do. But I don't want to make assumptions. You know, what's the old saying? Assumptions make an ass of you and me. So I just want to start at the very beginning by understanding your definition of culture. What actually is workplace culture?
So Jesse, as crazy as this might seem, I don't have a beautiful statement to really nail that down. And I'll tell you why I don't have one is because it's interpreted in so many different ways. Yeah. And so I could give you a definition that says it's a combination of a clear vision along with people that are living the values of the organization to bring it to life. And it wouldn't be wrong. I could also give you a definition that says it's a group of people that connect personally and professionally to be able to support each other through the tough times and to celebrate the successes as well is another definition that we've got. The reality is culture can be a wonderful, wonderful thing. Culture can be really crap as well. And I think many people listening, myself included, have been in workplaces, both health and non-health, that it's really sucked to work there, Jesse. It's really sucked to work there. And so, in essence, to really embrace the castle, it's the vibe. It really is the vibe of the organization, of the team.
Man, you just actually, we must be having a bit of an ESP moment because as you were saying that, I was having the vibe you're on a line run through my head and I feel like there's a little moment of synergy there and great connection over good Australian humour. So if it is the vibe, if it is all of those sorts of things, one of the things then if it's sometimes hard to define, right? If it's, we can feel it, we know it's there. It's like walking into a room. You can feel the energy. You can't always put your finger on it, but you know what's happening, right? And I think of sometimes, you go to those family reunions where Uncle Bob hasn't spoken to Aunt Betty for 30 years and no one's saying anything, but you can cut the air with a knife, that kind of stuff, right? So I guess the question I want to ask you then is, if it's hard to define, and I agree with that, how do you create it with intention if it's so hard to define?
Yeah. So the reason it's so hard to define, Jesse, is that there's so many moving parts to a culture. And I think that's the example you gave there of cut the air with a knife sort of thing, or the tension that we sometimes can feel. Well, it's the opposite is a thriving magnetic culture where you can really feel the energy. And Jesse, I think that the vibe where it really is really quite tense in an organization or in a team, that happens when people aren't willing to have important conversations.
Yeah.
And So creating the space for important conversation to happen, whether it's about the future, whether it's about a 10-year obsession as to where we're going as an organization in the next 10 years, or it's about, I like you as a person, Jesse, but what you said in that meeting last week, it just didn't sit right. And I'd just like to have a quick chat with you about how I can understand what you had in mind there, because I've been thinking about it and I just feel uncomfortable about what we spoke about. It's the big conversations, the big ideas, and the smaller ideas that need to be dealt with as well, Jesse. So in essence, and this is a long-winded answer, which takes me back to my youth, Jesse, because when I first started winning awards...
Last year then, mate.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's right. You got it, Jesse. But when I first started winning awards at Physioco, people would ask me, what is culture and how do you build it? And I'd have this long-winded example or answer that made sense to me, and no one else had any idea what the hell I was talking about. And Jesse, I've then realized I need to communicate in a clearer way. And so over time, that's what became the Culture is Everything book. And the Culture is Everything book explains the four parts to a Culture is Everything system and the 19 steps or the 19 items that are repeatable, that create a sustainable culture. And so the answer to your question is very hard to define, but there are definitely some building blocks that build up to said vibe that gets us to the essence of a strong team culture.
Okay. Love that. So if we want to create a thriving culture where there is that energy, and again, you can feel it, and we've all, as much as we've probably experienced the negative type of vibe, we've also felt the good vibe. Most of us would have experienced that.
Yep.
And so if we want to create that, mm-hmm. and we're thinking, okay, I would love to work in a place like that, but I would also love to be the person that helps create that. What are some of those steps that you spoke about? There's those four sections and then, of course, you know, the 19 pieces underneath that. So could you just walk us through one or two keystone pieces of that so we can really get an understanding?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I'll start with the fourth of the four parts of the Culture is Everything system, which is where the quick wins often happen. I think it's important to build some momentum sometimes.
Yeah.
And so the Culture is Everything system is what I've discovered. There are four parts to it. And one part of it is some people, when I say this, some people say, oh, not that stuff again. And other people will be like, yes, tell me the detail of this because I want to know about this sort of stuff. Yeah. And so the fourth part is show more love. Mm. It's quite simply show more love. And I learned this the hard way, Jesse, because I had a team at the Physio Co that were good people, were doing good work, but they weren't doing as great a work as I thought their potential was. And I think many of business owner and team leaders have been in that situation.
Mm-hmm.
And it turns out that I hadn't told them that I thought they were doing good work, but that it'd be better if they did great work. And I didn't ask them what's going on. Well, how can I help you and support you and recognize you for the work you're doing? So some of the parts of show more love, which is really important, is regular recognition from the CEO or the business owner. And I'm not talking about great work on making great sales or you turned up on time sort of stuff. Yeah, you can notice that sort of stuff if you like. But how about recognition that says, I really noticed how you connected with that client, or I really noticed how you really did give your full self and worked harder as a person to really connect with our clients or our teammates. And I noticed that and I really appreciate it. It lives our core value of respect everyone. And I really appreciate what you're doing there. And that sort of recognition from business owners or the CEO is really powerful sort of stuff, Jesse. So that's one example in show more love. Another one is that bad stuff happens, Jesse, in our lives, whether we like it or not. And I'm not talking about it only at work, making a mistake at work. Mistakes at work happen. We understand that. But bad stuff happens in people's personal lives as well. And I think it's so important that we are connected to our team members to firstly, damn well know that something's not quite going right in their personal life, and then give them the time and space and maybe send a gift if it's appropriate, or just let them know, you know what, we heard something went wrong, a parent or grandparent passed away or something didn't quite go right. And let's just acknowledge it and give people the space to deal with their personal lives so they can also get on with their professional lives as well. That's another part of show more love, Jesse. And the last one I'll just capture is that if you're going to build a strong team and a business that does great work over a long period of time, do not ever forget to capture the memories. And I think it's important. I think it's important that we create a culture book or a yearbook or a slideshow or something that captures what we did in the year of 2021 so that we can look back on 2021 and then we can replicate it in 2022 and we can it's a bit like a school yearbook. It's a bit like some sort of documenting what happened in your team that year. I think that's really powerful for building a strong team culture.
I think that's fantastic. I've never heard that idea in terms of a yearbook for the business. I think it's a wonderful idea.
And I guess it's also really nice to be able to reflect on the progress that you make as well, because oftentimes people are achieving lots of things, doing some wonderful work, but yeah, in the day-to-day busyness, we forget about it. And so it is nice to also celebrate those wins, as you say, so we can go, you know what, we have actually gotten through a hell of a lot of stuff.
Entirely, Jesse. And so, Jesse, a lot of these ideas are not my, I didn't create them, but I found them for all different places, and I brought them together to use them at the Physio Co, test them, and then sort of document them in the Culture is Everything system. And so this culture book comes from a very famous cult organization called Zappos, which is now part of the Amazon family. And they famously made culture their number one priority. And a culture book is something that I learned from them in Las Vegas in the US a decade or more ago. And so I'm going to hold up, Jesse. I know that we're on podcast, but you can see me. Here is the 2020 culture book for the Physio Co. And we've been creating a culture book like this. It's a small little 50-odd page book that captures the memory of the year. And we've got them since 2012. Lots of people that I've been supporting and mentoring have also created them over the years. And interestingly, you'll see on the front cover of this one, Jesse, you can see it. Yep. It is a Zoom. There are Zoom tiles on the front of the 2020 version because we spent a whole lot of 2020 on Zoom.
That's very Brady Bunch like there, mate. Very, very good. I love it. I really, really like that. I'm a big fan of Zappos as well. And of course, Tony Hsieh recently passed away, which is incredibly sad. But I wanted to... This is another little segue, so thank you for giving me another one. This is a gift. Zappos, wonderful business, obviously. And yes, they've got their core values. They're known for it. But in Tony Hsieh's book, Delivering Happiness, he talks about his first business, Link Exchange. Mm-hmm. And he spoke about where they were growing so quickly that at one point they were kind of hiring anyone who had a pulse. Probably optional in some senses. Yeah, I'm joking, of course, but they lost control of their culture because they were growing so quickly. They was plugging every gap they could with a person, and their recruitment processes became stressed and strained. And it became such that Tony Hsieh, I think he forewent some of his earn out money because he was so unhappy there. He just left. So I will come back to some other things I wanted to speak about, but while we're talking about Zappos and Tony Hsieh, how is it that a rapidly growing company can maintain good culture when you're under that kind of growth pressure?
So the short answer, Jesse, is it's really bloody hard.
Yeah.
And because I've been through that as well. And we've had our challenges at the Physio Co. years where we grew into three new states to deliver services in three new states in 1 year of Australia, involving 100% growth of our team in various years. It's been really difficult, really, really challenging time. The answer in my best experience, knowing that it doesn't work all the time, but the best I've got to do it to getting the best hires the most is a robust recruiting process. And it's a recruiting process based upon the top grading approach. Top grading is a book written by the Smart brothers. Jeff and Brad Smart, is they brothers or are they father and son? I might have that
they're
wrong.
Father and son. I think they're father and son.
Yeah, thank you. Appreciate that. But I'll tell you the basics of a robust recruiting process according to top grading in my experience, and Jesse, you know it, so feel free to jump in as well. But it's a multi-step process where you interview people over a period of time. It's a multi-person process. And so there are a number of people who are assessing the applicant to make sure they do. And it's mostly a culture fit. Do this person align to our core values? Are they going to help us move towards our vision? Are they going to connect with our team on a personal level so that we can then do great work on a professional sense? Because in healthcare, we've seen far too often that people get recruited because they've got both a heartbeat and an APRA registration is sometimes I'm half joking, Jesse, but by the same token, there are people recruited to teams and businesses which are best suited to work in other teams and businesses is the best way that I can possibly put that in.
Yeah, absolutely. And interestingly, you touch on the concept of culture fit, and I know you have a model very similar to this one. We talk about the performance culture matrix, and I know you've got a similar model with slightly different labels. I think it's competence and character. Is that?
That's right. Yep.
Yeah, yeah. So same thing, really. It's a 2x2 grid, basically, and we're looking for people who are competent and have the right character, or in our language, they're a culture fit and they're good performers.
Yep.
One of the things I've noticed, actually, quite commonly is, and I've been guilty of this too, I'll just own up to that, is we tolerate people who are competent in their role. They're good performers, but they're not a great culture fit. And we sometimes tolerate things from them because we value the skill set, but the culture fit's not quite there. And it's usually those people that cause us the headaches, the ones that keep us awake at night, the ones that generally cause us to gnash our teeth and so on.
Yes.
So I wanted to ask, is that something that you see commonly other business owners doing as well? Is that a common problem, or is it just something unique to dentists or physios or healthcare providers? Why, and if it is common, how do we kind of get the courage to deal with it? And can we make them become a culture fit, or help them become a culture fit, or is it really a case of they're a fit or not a fit?
Yeah, so good questions there, Jesse. I think is it only a part of dentistry? Absolutely not, is my experience in that. And the words of character and competence, which is the method, the word that I now use, Jesse, they came to me through a guest on my podcast.
Oh, nice.
The Think Big, Act Small podcast. And I do have more into my life than physiotherapy, culture, and Aussie rules football, Jesse, but I'm going to give you another Aussie rules football story here. And it's Paul Roos.
Okay.
Paul Roos, the famous AFL player. And then he went on to coach the Sydney Swans, and he went on to coach the Melbourne Demons. And he's now involved with the North Melbourne Kangaroos as well.
Mm-hmm.
But he was a guest on the Think Big, Act Small podcast, and he talked to me about everyone in AFL, we're talking about players, mm-hmm. at a certain level of competence. They're all good. There's no question about that. But how you build a team with a strong team culture is to have a base level of competence, and then you focus on character. And by making, just because someone is high on competence, if they're low on character, they're not a fit for the particular team that Paul Roos coaches, and he deals with it directly one-to-one. And I'm not sure if I should. I think I already swore on this podcast.
No, you can go for it, mate. This is an adult show.
Okay, that's good. That's good. So Paul Roos at the Sydney Swans had a very simple no dickhead policy.
Yeah.
And that really buys into his character versus competence message. So yeah, that's where it came from. Definitely applies to other industries, including the ones that I work in and including the AFL side of things. And how do we deal with it? Jesse, we've got to be brave. That's the biggest answer I can give you. And that is that if someone's not doing what you think that they should be doing in terms of their character they bring or the behaviors they bring, then they need to have, you need, as the business owner or the team leader or even a teammate, if the business owner is not willing to do it, it is possible for team members to privately, respectfully say, I need to talk to you about something which has been bothering me. Is now a good time?
Mm.
And when someone's got some bad feedback about you, Jesse, your ears prick up pretty closely is my experience. So, but here's what happens in my experience when people try and give feedback to other team members is that they've already played the conversation around in their head so many times. Mm-hmm. And by the time they get to the conversation, they show up and they're already halfway through the conversation when the other person at the other end has no freaking idea what's coming. And so all of a sudden there becomes this, and the competence of the person is not in question. It's the character, and which is also becomes with listening skills, awareness skills. There's so much to that. And so then if you show up in a conversation with someone already halfway through it, which is talking about things that aren't going great, you're almost certainly going to end up with a reactive fight on your hands or disagreement on your hands.
Yep.
It's so important to have a one-to-one conversation that starts with some context. And I call it an inoculation or a vaccination. Mm-hmm. I learned it from a coach that I worked with. And quite simply, it's a teeny tiny bit of what's going on, and then allow a question. Jesse, there's something on my mind. I really would like to speak to you about it. You may not like what I'm going to talk about, but could we have a quick chat about it, please? And from there, we've set the scene. They're all ears, and we say, and then we deal with the behavior challenge, and we ask, what's going on? I really reckon that maybe I'm just receiving this the wrong way. Tell me more about it, and let's have those brave one-to-one conversations is what's needed, Jesse. That's the only way that I know to deal with that sort of stuff.
Yeah, I love that, because in essence, you're letting the person mentally prepare themselves. So as you said, if you're having the conversation, you've been through it 100 times in your own head. Yep. You catch that person on the hop. And of course, as you say, you run the risk of having an adverse outcome. But I like the permissioning piece as well. I like the fact, can we have this conversation now? And maybe now is not the best time, but can we at least book a time to have that conversation? Yep. And I guess if you're the sort of person who wants to initiate that conversation, you've got to be mindful of when to have the conversation, where to have the conversation, what might come up, what might trigger them, what might trigger you, all those sorts of things, so you can keep a check on, wow, that don't put your foot on that landmine, because we're going to blow up the conversation and cause all manner of hell.
Entirely. By the same token, we've got to be willing to deal with those landmine type issues, but not do it in a way which causes said explosion. And just an example is that I've got a we digress a little bit because the culture is everything system is about the repeatable steps to building a strong team culture, which I think is critical to building a great and sustainable team. But there's another part to my understanding, which I didn't realize in the early days either, Jesse, and that is the character of the leaders who are leading the team, and a curious, caring, empathetic group of leader or leaders who are willing to build the system, but then fine tune, tailor, adjust as we go forth is really useful. Mm. And to help people do that, there's an online community I lead called the Culture is Everything Club. And there's a member of the Culture is Everything Club who just this week was having a real challenge with someone at work, and it was really eating him up and taking up a lot of time outside of work. And so this person very bravely organized a time to meet in the park so they could go for a walk. Well, I'm not sure if it was lunch. I think it was before work. It was before work. They were both senior members of the team, mm-hmm. but meeting in the office or in the clinic just felt like it was uncomfortable. It wasn't the right place to do it. So to have a chat and to walk and talk, you don't have to look in the other person's eyes if it's more comfortable to be both walking and looking straight ahead sort of stuff. There are many ways to be able to do this sort of stuff, Jesse, but being brave enough to make it happen is the critical bit.
Yeah, fantastic. So I just want to pick up that thought process for a moment, and then I've got another few questions. With the concept of character fit, you know, mm-hmm. culture fit, or you use competence and character, I use performance and culture fit.
Yep.
One of the things that I just want to understand around character mm-hmm. is if someone, let's use Paul Roos's footy team as an example. If someone is not the great fit for Paul Roos's team, mm-hmm. what I'm understanding, and please correct me if I've got this correct or otherwise, yep. is it doesn't necessarily mean they're a bad person. It's just about fit. Mm. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, look, it is. It is. This has got nothing about whether someone's a good person or not.
Yeah.
This is entirely, and so I think maybe the best way that I can, that's the short answer. And just another example, Jesse, is that I think that as leaders, we need to be continually thinking about this continuum of empathy at one end of the continuum where we empathetically connect with team members and accountability at the other end. Mm. So an empathy accountability continuum, I think, is a critical idea that we need to be thinking about. And the reality is that I spent the first half of my time at the Physio Co with an empathy accountability continuum that sort of stopped in the middle. I was this softer, people-focused entrepreneur that accountability was not something that I was very comfortable with, and I wasn't something I did very well.
Mm.
But over time, as I've built my skills, and that's contributed to the character of leader I've become, I've actually shined a light or opened up the other side of that continuum, if you will, and therefore my character and my skill has improved, and I've been able to grow myself. And so I give you that example because it's not out of the question that people can grow and improve, but they sure as hell can't do it if they don't have someone who shines a light on what's missing and what's expected of them. So I think it's important that we do shine the light and give people the opportunity as opposed to just very simply deciding this person belongs somewhere else.
I actually have never heard that expression of the empathy and accountability continuum. And I'm thinking about that as you're talking. I really, really like it because one of the things that I know, certainly, you know, I've struggled with in the past, and I also know some people I know in dentistry have struggled with as well, is trying to find that balance between being human and caring, but also going, there is work to be done. We can't just hold hands and hug each other all day. Yeah. And without trying to be Rambo-esque about the, you know, do the job, you know, kind of vacillating between being too soft and too hard and trying to find that balance between being caring and empathetic, but also saying we've got a mission, we've got work to do, we've got outcomes to achieve. And I really like that continuum. What I want to ask is, for me, as I hear the word continuum, and what comes to my mind is almost like a DJ's mixing desk, you know, like how do you get the right balance, right?
Yeah.
And I guess it's probably not a simple answer to this question, but how do you find the right balance? Because I know every situation is going to be different. I know every leader is going to be different. I get that. But I just know in my own leadership journey, I've erred towards the empathetic side as well. Mm-hmm. And then when I've wanted to come back and talk about accountability, it has been jarring compared to what's gone before, or I've felt uncomfortable about it and dealt with it in a, righto, Tristan, here's the A, B's and C's, right, get bloody on with it, yeah, and all that sort of stuff. So I'm trying to figure out how to navigate that path.
Yeah. So Jesse, it's not easy, and especially not easy is that, like, you and I don't know you that well, Jesse. I know of you. We've had a couple of conversations in the last week or so. I don't know you that well. And so if I needed something from you, or you needed something from me, it'd be difficult for you to be able to connect with me on a human to human level in a personal way, because we don't know each other that well. By the same token, if I've been working with you or someone else for 6 months, a year, 2 years, then I should be connecting with you on a personal and professional level, and I should know you pretty well. And the reason I get to know you is because I'm interested, I ask questions, and I consider you as an interesting human being. By the same token, I'm not going to get anything unless I give something as well. So if I don't share the challenges, I'm the boss, but I make mistakes every day in my life, and I stuff things up, and we've got sometimes hasn't happened in a while, but we've got a baby and little Xavier vomits in the car, and like there's this stuff like that some people don't mention, and they, by not mentioning it, they forget that they're not coming across as a flawed human being. And so the answer to the question is to know when to choose the right amount of empathy and the right amount of accountability is you got to get to know people on a personal and professional level. And when you know people on a personal and professional level, it's much easier to be able to then decide when is the right time to be accountable and when is the right time to be empathetic. And a quick example in my team that I lead at the PhysioCo, I've got a fellow in my team whose name's Mike. Mike's doing an important piece of work at the moment, which is involving a whole lot of extra data and information he's collecting for us. And it's really bloody hard work for him. I'm his direct manager, and I'm erring towards the empathetic support around that new task that he's doing. At the other end, he's responsible for delivering, for leading our team leaders and making sure that we continue to grow our service and help more people and provide a sustainable business. And there's some numbers around what's expected of him there. He's done that before. He's done it for years. I'm accountable, and I'm delivering an accountable conversation with him as to where we're going and what's working and what's not working and what are you going to do about it if it's not working out on that task as well, Jesse.
Yeah, I love that. Tristan, on your podcast, Think Big, Act Small, I know you speak to lots of different leaders across lots of different industries. And I wanted to ask you, as you've, like me, you get to talk to lots of people. And ladies and gents, if you want to learn about all of this stuff, I'd encourage you to head across to the Apple podcast or Spotify or wherever you want to go. But tune into the podcast because it's great. But what I wanted to ask you around the interviews that you've conducted and the people you speak to is really trying to understand, as leaders, how do we get better at this? Because no one teaches this. Is it just a case of practice and being willing to be vulnerable and being willing to make mistakes and to be better tomorrow than we are today? Is that really the essence of it? Or is there something that we really need to be focusing on in particular?
It's a really important question. I've sort of got two answers or ideas bouncing around in my mind as I sit here to try and give you my best answer. Firstly, I think we need to be aware that to lead others, we need to firstly be able to lead ourselves. And so I think that this idea of being a leader, and it's got super sexy and popular over the last decade or three or whatever it might be. In the same with being an entrepreneur, has become amazingly attractive. We already spoke about that.
Yeah, we have.
But the reality is, knowing yourself and being able to lead yourself and be empathetic to yourself. Let's use that same example, empathy and accountability continuum. Knowing when to be empathetic to yourself because things are really tough at the moment, and knowing when to keep yourself to account and work hard and get the important stuff done that you said to get done. That's a starting point for being the best leader you can be for other people, is to be the best self-aware leader you can be of yourself, which is pretty meta, but it's a really important concept. Secondly, Jesse, I think you need to find a mentor or a group of mentors, a safe space where you can vulnerably share the challenges, but also be held at the same, find someone who's going to be hold up the mirror in the appropriate level of empathy and accountability to you as well, because it's all well and good to be the best leader of yourself, but sometimes we need to kick up the pants from someone else as well. So yeah, a safe space where you can be with peers is pretty important, I reckon, Jesse.
Yeah, love that, mate. In your Culture is Everything Club, and I know you've got the Culture is Everything Kickstarter program, and for those listening, there are some free resources around that, and you can grab those off Tristan's website, tristanwhite.com.au. But what I wanted to ask of you is, particularly coming back to the culture piece, we've touched on different elements of it. And one of the things that I want to be able to just ask you, really just to kind of address a common concern I hear, is that when we're creating the culture by design rather than by default, Mm-hmm. And sometimes we're trying to transition from a default culture or what was set to a new culture. We're trying to re-engineer the culture.
Mm.
One of the challenges is, how do I get my existing team members to buy into this shift? How do I do that? Is it a case of just saying, hey, guys, this is our 10-year commitment? Like you said earlier, this is our big focus. Is it a case of saying, I know it's happened in the past, but from this day forward, this is where we're going? Is it a case of, dare I say it, kind of get on board or get off kind of routine? So yeah. I just want to ask you again, because I think there's probably the empathy and accountability continuum somewhere in amongst all this as well. I'm just trying to draw the link through here.
Yeah. So I think we need to consider our friend and mentor, Brené Brown, on this. And then he said, Brené famously says that clear is kind, unclear is unkind. And I think that's pretty powerful sort of stuff. I know you're a big fan of Brené, I think.
I think when we spoke last week, I might have fessed up. And I know how weird this sounds when I say it out loud, but I have an intellectual crush on Brené Brown. And I add the word intellectual in there just so it sounds a little less weird and creepy than it would otherwise sound. But I think she's wonderful. I think she's really clever.
Yeah. So clear is kind is the lesson that I've learned from Brené. And I'm sure you've heard it too. But clear is kind is the concept. But no one likes a bad surprise, is my experience. Yep. Surprises are great when you think when the best thing in the world happens, and surprises that you weren't expecting that really stop you in tracks really suck. And I think we need to put ourselves in the shoes of our team members, that just because the goalposts were in a certain direction. And here's the thing, when you don't have a clear vision, a clear direction, a clear culture, where everyone thinks the goalposts are, is actually probably a little bit different. Some people think we're kicking to the left. Some people think we're kicking to the right. Some people didn't even realize there was a game going on. And that's the reality. So why I say all that is that it's important to communicate it clearly. I think you should let people know that there's a change coming. There should be a one-to-many conversations that involving daily huddle stand-up meetings, if you're having them, which I think you definitely should be having them. There should be email communications. Let people know what the business owner is working on and ask for input, knowing full well that if people suggest that we should be making this big shift to what they'd like to see in the vision of the business, we respectfully receive the responses, but we don't necessarily have to go with them. We can say, appreciate your thoughts, but that's, as the business owner, I've decided that's not something we're going to pursue, but don't stop giving suggestions. And so the answer is, Jesse, let people know what you're working on, ask for input, let them know there's something new coming, and then share it with them, and then follow up with one-to-one conversation with each team member, whether that's yourself or whether that's their team leader, whoever it might be, the way your business is organized. But engage in a one-to-one and one-to-many way is my suggestion. And at the end of the day, I've been through this. We had about 20 team members when we released a new vision and a 10-year obsession back in 2009, the very pivotal year that I mentioned earlier. And about 17 of the team members did continue to be members of our team. And there were three of them who just like, you know what, I liked it the other way. Mm. I think it might be best. And two of them decided pretty quickly that they were going to work somewhere else. One of them sort of was really loved the old way and just wanted to stick to the old unclear way. When it became clear that the new way was the way we're headed, it decided that they'd work somewhere else.
Yeah, so they were committed to the status quo.
Yep.
Tristan, you've been really generous with your time today. Firstly, thank you. And ladies and gents, if you want to find out more about Tristan's work, I'd really encourage you to check out his work, firstly, because it's incredibly good, but it's also incredibly important. And tune into his podcast. The podcast is a treasure trove of goodies. There's going to be so much good stuff there. Head across to Apple and find Think Big, Act Small. Grab a copy of his book, of course, which is Culture is Everything. And of course, you can head across to his website, tristanwhite.com.au, and find out about the Kickstarter program there as well. And there's, as I said, some freebies there. But I've got to save the most important question to last, Tristan. And this is, I think, a really big question. It's a little bit off topic, but it's an important question. Mm-hmm. Who's going to win the flag this year?
Oh, we're back to footy. We're back to AFL. Back to footy.
Well, I think I know what you're going to say, but we're going to have to probably respectfully disagree, I suspect.
Well, possibly, Jesse. So the mighty Richmond Tigers, who have clearly won the last couple, and hopefully we can win another one. But their culture, which has been much talked about, is under a whole lot of pressure right now. Mm. The coach's personal life has changed. I think it's probably the best way that I can describe that, Jesse. And whether they're able to weather the storm, I suppose, is the concept. So we'll be under a whole lot of pressure. Look, here's hoping. I'm 41 years old, Jesse. I was 37 years old before Richmond won a premiership, I think it was, or thereabouts in my lifetime, and we've won three since. I'm satisfied for the time being, mate.
Happy with that. Well, I can tell you my club is having some cultural issues as well at the moment. It's the Collingwood team.
Yes. Yeah.
They are having some strife, and I think they've got a little bit of soul searching to do as well. So It's interesting to see the impact of culture on the performance. And so I think it's going to be an interesting year for both of our footy clubs to see how they go on the park, knowing what's been happening.
Let's just hope we can get on the park this year, Jesse. I think there's a little bit of doubt still, but fingers crossed, 2021 is better than 2020.
Yeah, hopefully so. Tristan, once again, mate, you've been a very generous guest today, mate. I just want to say thank you. It's been a lot of fun talking to you. I love these conversations. They're big conversations. They're important conversations. And thank you for having the tenacity, the courage, and the will to write, to publish, to broadcast, to do all the things you do on this topic, because I think it's a really important thing. And again, ladies and gents, I just encourage you to go out and check out Tristan's work, because it's really high caliber. It's top shelf, and go check it out. So once again, mate, thank you.
Jesse, a pleasure. Thanks for having me. See you later.
Cheers, mate.
Thank you for listening to the Savvy Dentist podcast with Dr. Jesse Green. For more free tools and resources, join the free Facebook group. Visit drjessegreen.com/Facebook. And for more episodes, visit drjessegreen.com/savvydentist.